others. Admission to this screening is free and open to the public. For further information on this presentation or another IMAC program, you can call the IMAC 24-Hour Arts Line at 549-ARTS. That's 549-ARTS, or you can call the business office at 549-9666. That's 549-9666. This is 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate June 2nd. The largest planet in our solar system, Jupiter, is now very low in the west after sunset. Another planet this low in the sky would be easy to overlook, but Jupiter's still noticeable because it's so bright. There are also two bright stars near Jupiter now, just above it in the west after sunset. They're Castor and Pollux in the constellation Gemini. The planet Jupiter and these two stars are about to disappear in the sun's glare. Our motion in orbit is placing them lower in the sky. Soon our line of sight to Jupiter and these stars will be filled by the dazzling sun. In other words, these objects will be behind the sun from our point of view. But Earth will keep moving in orbit, and Jupiter, Castor, and Pollux will return to the sky. By late summer, they'll be visible in the east before dawn. When will you last see Jupiter? Well, the answer depends on how much care you take in trying to see it, and on your local sky conditions. Casual observers will probably notice it last around mid-June. More careful observers may glimpse the planet near the very young moon on the evening of June 23rd. As usual, binoculars will keep the planet in view for some days after it disappears to the eye. That's Jupiter, now a very bright object low in the west after sunset, soon to disappear from our evening sky. Our program is Stardate. Our writer-producer is Deborah Bird. We want you to keep up to date on astronomy, so we've created our Starline 900 number, which features a different message each and every Monday. The call costs $1 a minute.
And it's a complete rip-off, so don't call it.
This is Brain Damage here in WUSB Stony Brook. What do you think, Jimmy? Think we got Joel Block mad at us now?
Well, that is if he finds out.
If he finds out,
yeah.
Well.
I don't think anybody will tell, do you?
Well, Stardate is produced at the University of Texas at Austin, so someone would have to write a letter and tell him that we did that, but I doubt our listeners are intelligent enough to write letters. You have to forgive me. I've been up for 2 days now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I get kind of punchy, you know.
Mm. And this is just the beginning of the program.
Just the beginning, yeah. It's going to be a fun 2 hours ahead.
I can imagine. You're either going to fall asleep on the air, or you're going to do a show that will have people either furious with you or totally in love with you. I think one or the other.
Well,
or both at the same time, I think.
I intend to have fun, and you can be a part of it. 632-6901 is our telephone number. This is Brain Damage. We're going to be doing all kinds of neat things. But the first thing we're going to do is give credit where credit is due. Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Center Reach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
We now return return to our recording already in progress.
Yes, that's music from the film Paparazzi, music by Philip Glass. And that track entitled Sarah Pallada. You ever see that film, Jim? Paparazzi?
No, I didn't, but I saw a coming attraction.
I think I moved the microphone closer to the mouth.
Thank you.
People can actually hear what you're saying.
Thank you, but I didn't see the movie, but I did see a coming attraction for it. Does that count?
No,
and
it
make
doesn't.
Me part? Oh.
No, Jim, it doesn't. What I will do is tell you the experience, a wonderful experience of walking into a huge theater. There's a theater in New York where there's just one screen.
Oh.
I know this is hard to believe, but there is a theater in New York where there is one screen.
A Uniplex?
Walk in. I guess that's what they call it. What else would you call it? And one film is on the screen, and everybody's watching that one film. Well, most people are watching some babies crying and things like that. But for the most part, people are watching this. It's a huge picture. It's in Midtown Manhattan. What's it called, that place?
Oh, the Ziegfeld?
Probably the Ziegfeld, yeah. This was when this came out.
Like 54th near 6th Avenue, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. When did this come out? This came out back in 1988, I think.
I think so.
And just seeing the images with that music, because that's how the film opens. It's incredible with a good sound system. I just don't make films like that anymore. Well, actually, they're supposed to make another one. They're supposed to make the third in the series.
What was the second?
Kainoskatsi was the first.
Oh,
Paparazzi is the second.
Oh.
And Something Else Katsi is going to be the third, I think.
Oh.
Paparazzi, by the way, from the Hopi language, means an entity, a way of life that consumes the life forces of other beings in order to further its own life. Sort of like what we do here. We sort of, you know, devour others to get ahead. Dog eat dog, that kind of thing. Well, so it's only fair. It's only American, I say.
Wait, when you say here,
no
you mean in the United States,
Jim?
Or you mean WUSB?
Well, mostly WUSB, but
oh.
I think the rest of the United States sort of imitates what we do here at USB.
Oh, well, so then you know about my whispering campaign behind your back.
Of course. They're thinking of doing some sort of a series on TV, sort of like a Dynasty thing about what goes on behind the scenes here at USB, all the plotting and
really?
and scheming and double-crossing. It's something else. And
gee,
there's a character based upon you.
Is that so?
Which I understand is going to be quite interesting.
What kind of character is that?
Oh, just a two-timing, conniving, somebody with no morals whatsoever.
In other words, they did you justice.
They certainly did.
Well, actually, no, I have to say, I think they're kind of sugarcoating the role there, it sounds to me.
Well, they might. I haven't seen the pilot yet. I think Marvin Kipman's going to be writing something about it.
I think they're glossing over my character. I think they're
Give them time. Give them to have to develop the character first, because you have to realize people don't know you. When people know who you are, that's when they're ready to learn about the real dirt.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah. Do you know who's going to play me?
I don't know yet. Who's the guy that did my dinner with Andre? Not Andre, the other guy.
Wallace Shawn.
I think he was. He expressed an interest in the role.
Really?
Because Barbara did also.
Your name is legendary.
Yeah, your name is very legendary
amongst non-hirsute circles. Were you operating the camera the night that study of Pates were taken? The two Pates back to back. The
Pates?
Audience won't know what we're talking about. But
Pates?
Yeah, P-A-T-E. Isn't that what it's?
Pates.
Well, pate, I think, is when someone's referring to a bald head or bald.
A bald head? I wasn't operating a camera. I would not operate a camera for that.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Uh huh.
So, but I just wondered, since when I asked you what role,
right.
what person would play me,
right.
the very first thing you thought of was a character with hair that flies around wildly
I was thinking of the smile. Have you ever seen the guy smile? Wallace Shawn, he's got this impish look to him. And I think listen to that laugh, folks. Listen to that laugh. I mean, it's incredible. I know how he does it.
Oh, you're too kind. You're too kind.
I am.
And I think Wallace Shawn is a fine actor.
Oh, he certainly is. And he'll be stopping by. He'll be stopping by later on tonight.
Really?
To say hello,
really?
Yes. Of course, he'll be stopping by off air. People on the radio won't be able to hear him. But he will be stopping by to say hi to us and bring us some donuts, I think. Awfully nice. Anyway, this is Eric Corley. Eric Corley. That's Jim Wiener over there. This is Brain Damage, and we're on until midnight. And, I guess we have no choice but to talk about German unification, right? I mean, it's obvious we're leading up to that.
I would say by every remark that we've made so far.
Well, then, listen to this. This is in today's paper. East Germany said yesterday it would end all border controls around West Berlin starting July 1st, effectively reuniting the city nearly three decades after it was split by the Berlin Wall. In other words, it's going to be one city again. On Wednesday, the government announced that by July 2nd, it would reopen all roads cut by the Berlin Wall. A government spokesman said yesterday all obligatory checks on people's documents would stop on July 1st, but there could still be occasional spot checks by customs officials.
What if somebody wanted their documents checked, like for old time's sake, or just so they could say
that they had... You'd
have
a tough time. Now, when I went over there last year, I had no problem getting my documents checked, and double-checked, and triple-checked. My first mistake was going over to East Berlin wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt. They didn't like that. But I guess now they would. And then coming back, I don't know what they wanted coming back, but they did that once over. They were polite, but they went through everything. But they didn't get what I was hiding, so that's the important thing. I smuggled out an East German mark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have it in my pocket, in fact.
Oh.
In fact, let me see if I can get this out. That's a key. I dropped a piece of paper on the floor. Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
I wasn't prepared to... Okay, now I've got both of them here. This is a West German mark. And this is an East German mark.
Decidedly lighter in weight.
You can certainly tell. I'm going to drop them both at the same time. You see?
Mm.
And the West German mark is the one that made that noise afterwards. Mm. It's made out of... have you ever felt one of these?
No.
It's very light.
Very lightweight.
Very light.
Is it aluminum that's made out of something?
I think it's aluminum.
Mm.
I do believe it's aluminum. And I could have been shot for carrying that out of the country. And I realized...
Eric, you can be shot for carrying it now.
Oh, that's not funny. I mean, I did risk my life to bring that thing out, and I did it for the sake of the listening audience, which is why I waited a year to reveal this fact.
I shot myself by accident.
What's wrong with you?
I shot myself by
you,
accident.
I shot yourself. What, did you shoot your teeth at?
No, I just kind of singed my lips.
Oh, you singed your lips. Well, your losses are a gain. It's time for Germany Today. Jim, it's a regular time of the show where we delve into foreign affairs that we really shouldn't be delving into.
Oh.
Now, this is a short program, but as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we're getting it more often now because, there's twice as much Germany now. I guess they feel they have to produce twice as much radio. Despite voter ripples at the polls and political maneuvering in the press, economic union seems on target, so can full German reunification be far behind?
Well, will this program... In addition to
you're
that
interfering
topic.
With the dramatic flow of this.
Sorry, you paused and you looked at me. I thought you wanted me to say
I expected you to sort of bow over in homage to this this articulation
okay.
here.
Okay. Wow.
The effect has been lost now, but let me try to continue.
Do it again.
No, I can't do it again. In a moment, though, you'll know the answer to that question, Ken Fuld, during reunification before or behind. And ahead lies a massive cleanup of the eastern environment after decades of communist neglect. By the way, this comes from West Germany, in case it's not apparent. All German sports and international competition could get tougher. Coke says East German marketplace is thirsty. So guess what? Well, we'll find out soon. Did you hear about the whole Coke fiasco? Well, I'll tell you about the Coke fiasco when we come back.
Okay.
The Coke fiasco. Not the colossal Coke sales that you see at 7-Elevens. Is that a weird sign? Every 7-Eleven has a sign. It says colossal Coke sale.
No, I haven't noticed that. But I've
And I want somebody to send a copy into National Lampoon where you have this big sign on 7-Eleven, colossal Coke sale, with two cop cars parked outside. You know, I think that would be a great thing to send to True Facts. Just give me credit when you do it. And finally, on this Germany Today program, will America curtail its operations at a leading airbase? We have a special section on this controversial issue. The program runs 11 minutes and 1 second, and it will begin in 3, 2, 1.
Germany Today. People, places, and politics. The arts, too. From Bonn, Berlin, and New York. Timely coverage of the events and issues inside Germany that are important to America.
This is Germany Today. I'm Lee Murphy in New York, with Peggy Troutman, Joseph Fleming, Alfred Schroeder, and Don Jordan in Germany. Despite voter ripples at the polls and political maneuvering in the press, economic union seems on target. So can full German reunification be far behind? Ahead lies a massive cleanup of the eastern environment after decades of communist neglect. All German sports? International competition could get tougher. Coke says East German marketplace is thirsty. So guess what? Will America curtail its operations at a leading airbase? We have a special section on this controversial issue.
I'm sorry, folks. I didn't know he'd say the exact same things I said. You had to hear that twice, but I still think I read it better. Don't you think so?
Well, let's compare. Can you back it up a little bit?
No, let's just get on with this thing and get over with.
Details in a moment on Germany Today. Considering the goal, unity for two such different political and ideological institutions, the quest for German unity is, by most standards, going remarkably well. Even Germany's top banker, who at first argued against speedy economic togetherness, is now upbeat about the future. So apparently are his colleagues.
Karl Rappold, the head of the West German Bundesbank, the central bank, says that the union of the communist economy in East Germany with the free market economy in West Germany is unique in history. Nevertheless, he's optimistic. Not only that it will work, but that the German economy will flourish. Other financial experts agree. Peter Peach, the spokesman for the Commerzbank, West Germany's third biggest, predicts the economic and monetary union will speed up economic growth rather than slow it down.
Quite definitely it will speed up the economic growth. We reckon with growth rates in East Germany alone of around 5 to 10% per year within the next years. And that means that for the combined GNP of both Germanys, the annual growth rate will be around 1 or 1.5 percentage points higher than it would be under other circumstances.
Peach does not consider too optimistic a forecast by the Federal Labor Office that unification will create new jobs and an increase of more than 1 million by the year 2000. He discounts fears of major inflation. He thinks East Germans will save a good deal of the hard West marks they will get after July 2nd in place of their weak East marks. Joseph Fleming in Bonn.
But even if those in the East continue their saving ways, other reunification costs are sure to rise. Take the environmental legacy left behind by the hardline communists and their state-run economy. Frightening and desolate are two words which come to mind.
Most Americans are stunned by dark-stained photos of lifeless land, Raped of its forests and deprived clean air and water, many parts of East Germany resemble a lunar landscape. The Thuringer Woods are dying. The city of Dresden reports some 75% of its drinking water is clinically dead, and some studies suggest a connection between skin disease and the amount of soot and dirt in the air near Bitterfeld. In all, the laws and practices there must change, and that's why the West German government included a clause in the treaty between the two Germanies calling for an environmental union. It demands a new set of rules and regulations to accompany the economic boom in East Germany and make certain both Germanies do what they can to clean up the environment. Environmentalists on both sides call the clause a necessary first step, but many are afraid the Germanies will lose courage when it comes to making real changes. West German environmentalists Arno Belau says some East German practices should be law in the West.
For instance, if you look what in East Germany, they have a speed limit, 100 kilometers per hour. And in West Germany, we don't have the speed limit. We just can go whatever we want. And, of course, everybody is driving like mad on the highways. And a reduction in speed just to 100 kilometers per hour would bring a 20% cut off of carbon dioxide emissions, and we just don't do it.
Even with the help of the coming environmental union, Bonn's Ministry of Environment says it will take decades before the damage there is repaired. In Cologne, I'm Peggy Trautman.
Business executives in several nations say they're wary about the economic impact of a reunited Germany. And they're not alone, apparently.
A united Germany is just around the corner, a political and economic giant in the heart of Europe. Will it also be a sports giant, as many hope and more fear? It's a wide open question. Looking at statistics and past records alone would answer it. The combined Germanys are indeed a sports giant, and adding up Olympic medals of the past would have it well ahead of the United States and breathing into the necks of the Soviets, especially in practically all disciplines of track and field and also swimming. But that's plain theory, said a spokesman for the National German Olympic Committee, Gerhard Braun.
Sure, an all-German team would be stronger. But whether that's enough for world leadership must be doubted. Both the Soviet Union and also the United States have greater potential.
Even if a German unification should come within a year, it'll take a bit longer until international sports will face all-German competition, also for sports bureaucratic reasons. European and world championships in the next couple of years will show whether the United Germans will indeed rake in more Olympic medals than anyone else. Alfred Schroeder reporting from Bonn.
Détente. Good politics for the U.S. colas. First it was Pepsi in Russia, and now Coke makes its move.
Getting into the East German market is still a difficult and risky proposition. Unless, of course, you're selling the world's most popular soft drink to people virtually thirsting for a higher quality beverage than the communist system had allowed them to enjoy for over 40 years. Yes, a booming business in recent months has prompted Coca-Cola to invest $140 million to quench that East German thirst in the future. Eventually, Coke will be bottled in six major East German cities and distributed throughout the country by regional bottling organizations. Wolf Henning Kriebel of Coca-Cola of Germany told me what prompted the company to take the plunge.
Well, since mid-February, we've sold more than 2 million cases of Coca-Cola shipped into East Germany from existing European production facilities. So now we are launching a $140 million capital investment program to begin bottling and distribution of Coca-Cola in East Germany.
Up to now, East Germany was as drab as it was thirsty for a decent soft drink. But thanks to Coke, that's changing fast.
Well, in Dresden, for example, the company has placed 1,000 outdoor posters throughout the city, and outdoor posters are being put up in several other Eastern German cities.
Though the market certainly is there, Coca-Cola isn't taking any chances on losing it. One of the first spots on East German television in mid-April, when advertising made its TV debut there, was a Coke commercial. In Bonn, this is Don Jordan.
As the Pentagon budget begins to shrink to help provide the so-called peace dividend, American visibility in the air over Germany may also diminish. And that's the subject of this special section.
Some 45 years ago, the people of Frankfurt never thought to question the existence of this airbase. The Rhein-Main airbase was an important part of the American presence, and America was needed by West Germany for defense and support. Today, the American military presence in Frankfurt stands at around 27,000, and many West Germans there want that reduced to zero. If the Americans don't go home, in the words of one local official, then there could be trouble. Many in the federal government are also clamoring for a troop withdrawal. Events in Europe, says Member of Parliament Alfred Mechtesheimer, have done away with the need for the troops.
This was necessary after the Second World War and under the positions of the Cold War, but today, in the period of Gorbachev, it's not necessary to hold the foreign people here in our country to train for a war which will never be here in Europe.
What's more, the American presence in Frankfurt means tens of thousands of acres of land are cluttered with bases, shopping centers, barracks, and housing projects. Germans in the crowded city want this land back for parks, apartments, and living space. During his last visit to Washington, Mr. President of Mainz, Karl Ludwig Wagner, made such demands official when he presented Richard Cheney with a wish list of territory and a request for its return. According to Mechtesheimer, the U.S. should seriously consider the consequences before it says no.
Such a different combination of motives, but nevertheless, this could bring us to a new movement, and I see some signs for this in the next 2-3 years, in a movement against the foreign troops, and I have some problems thinking on the results for Germany. It could lead to an anti-foreign feeling and an increasing feelings against foreign things in our country, and this would be terrible.
While many are in favor of a withdrawal, other local officials are worried that the absence of troops could damage the German economy. Shops, restaurants, and entire districts which cater to the American consumer needs will be forced to close down, meaning in some areas over 20% unemployment overnight. In Frankfurt, I'm Peggy Trautman.
In New York, I'm Lee Murphy.
New York City, imagine that. Tell me, What's it like to be a skateboard punk rocker? Leroy says, send a picture. Leroy says, hello. Leroy says, I'll keep on rocking, girl. Yeah, keep on rocking. Hey, Shell, you know it's kind of funny. Texas always seems so big. But you know you're in the largest state in the Union when you're anchored down in Anchorage. Oh, Anchorage. Anchored down in Anchorage.
Oh, I like that song a lot. I've played that song about 50 times in the last couple of days. I don't know why.
50 times in the last couple of days, and you've been up for the last couple of days without any sleep. Is that
correct?
Yeah,
that might have been. Well, that song, I think, has been keeping me going.
Oh.
Michelle Shocked in Anchorage off the Short, Sharp, Shocked album. That's really neat. Yeah. She's good. There's no question about that.
Yes.
I'm not going to debate that here tonight.
No,
she's good.
No.
Real good.
No, but there was a question that wasn't answered on that program about Germany that I wanted to ask.
Well, I just go back to the German question. There's a person there that...
Well, that wasn't what I was going to... I was just going to say, why haven't they addressed the issue of my proposal for the new name for the reunified country?
Which would be what?
Germany, Germany.
Germany, Germany. You had a comment about one of the reporters.
Yes. One of the reporters on that program, whose name is Don Jordan, his voice reminds me of Robert Klein's voice.
Robert Klein.
Yeah.
Robert Klein,
the comedian.
The comedian.
I'm not saying that the reporter acts like a comedian or that there's something comical or I'm not necessarily saying that there's something deficient about his reporting. I'm just saying the tone, and I happen to respect Robert Klein. I think he's very, very talented. I'm just saying that the tone of that person's voice just reminds me of Robert Klein's voice. And this person, Don Jordan, could very well be a very fine person and a good reporter. And it's just that his voice happens to remind me of Robert
Klein. Well, can you tell who this is?
This is Robert Klein speaking to you from WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Get me out of here.
That was Robert Klein.
Well, you knew that because he said this is Robert Klein, but do you think that would be Don Jordan? Is that his name?
It sounds like Don Jordan, yes. You could look at it from that point of view. You could say that Don Jordan sounds like Robert
Klein. Well,
I'll have
to ask Don Jordan to say the same thing and see if they sound the same.
You could.
I think that's a fair question.
You could ask Robert Klein if he wants to narrate part of Germany Today.
We're talking about German reunification, and you've chosen to latch upon something as trivial as the sound of somebody's voice. On the tape. And
that's correct.
I just can't help but wonder if that's symptomatic of a problem Americans have facing real issues.
No, it's simply symptomatic of a problem that I have facing real issues. I don't know about other Americans.
Well, you certainly do have a problem facing real issues. I can attest to that. I
certainly do.
Well, we have a real issue of the record.
Oh, really? Then I got to go now. I don't want to hear any real issues.
No, it's a newsletter.
I don't want to hear about it.
A newsletter from the Parents Music Resource Center. But we're not going to go to that now. We're going to go to that a little bit later. Because I want to tell you something about we were going to talk about Coke.
Coke, right. Coca-Cola.
The Coca-Cola campaign in East Germany. When I was in East Berlin, it's true, you could not get a Coke at all. You had this stuff called cola water.
That's what they call it.
It was the most vile tasting. Well, it was awful.
What was it
really
called?
Bad. It was warm, too. You can't get ice cubes anywhere in Europe. I don't know why that is. I mean, it's very easy to make ice cubes, but they can't seem to do it.
Well, what was it called? Cola Wasser? Is that what it was called?
I don't know. I asked for a Coke, and I got this, you know, and it was...
They call it cola water. Was it carbonated?
Well, the people in West Berlin told me it's called cola water. The people in East Berlin didn't really say anything. It's kind of like carbonated water with brown coloring.
Hmm.
Real yummy, but I don't know. It sort of disappointed me. I had all this money to spend over there, and I couldn't really find anything to buy, and certainly wasn't going to buy any more of that. I had a piece of pizza, too, and that was kind of bizarre. Didn't look like a piece of pizza. This had all this kind of pepperoni on top of bread.
Mm.
But everybody was lining up for it.
Mm.
Kind of sad, actually. But now it's not like that anymore. In fact, I'm going to go back to this year, probably, and see what it really is like. Be nice. But yes, Coca-Cola is going to move into East Berlin. I'm not saying that's necessarily a good thing. That's probably not a good thing, actually. I mean, I think just all too much Coca-Cola in the world. But did you hear about their advertising campaign?
No, actually.
Got completely fouled up. They had this magic can deal. You didn't hear about those? They had these magic cans where you would open them up, and apparently money would pop out of some of them. It was this whole big technological innovation where they made the cans weigh exactly the same as a can filled with Coke. But some of the cans, instead of having Coke in them, had money in them.
Wow.
And to make it feel like there was liquid, they put some sort of chlorinated water in there. Now, the problem was sometimes people would open the cans and the money wouldn't pop out, and then they'd drink the chlorinated water, and it would taste awful.
Oh, no.
Supposedly, they say it wasn't bad for you, but it tasted awful, and it led at least 1 6-year-old kid to file suit or something. I don't know, something in Massachusetts, I think. But
I think what it did was it led 1 6-year-old kid to wear a suit. I think.
Oh, I don't know. I don't always get all the words right.
Wrong again. I know. I'm sorry.
But the thing is, it made Coca-Cola very embarrassed. They put out this big full page ad last week saying, you know, how the cans work, and what to do if you win, and not to panic if you don't get Coke and you get money instead. And they said, you know, a small percentage of the cans do not function and the money will not come out. A smaller percentage will explode violently in your hands. no, I don't know if that actually happened. But the gist of the matter is that as of yesterday, I believe, the whole thing has been scrapped. All the cans have been pulled back and somebody has lost their job, I'll bet. But this multi-million dollar promotion is a complete failure. And you have to wonder, what's going to happen to all the money in all those cans?
That's right.
Is there going to be somebody back at Coca-Cola opening all these cans, finding the money, and collecting it into a fund?
Undoubtedly. Probably goes back into their promotional budget. But what I wonder is if this will spawn a trend among banks for their promotional purposes,
uh-huh.
where when you go to a cash machine, sometimes instead of getting cash, you'll get soft drink.
I wouldn't like that at all.
I would. I don't mean shooting out at you. I mean like a soft drink, and then you know the money after that.
I read a story though. I read this in a newsletter this week about something that happened a few years ago in Texas when ATMs were just starting to make their appearance. This man walked into the bank and with a heavy New York accent. They were very careful to point this out. A heavy New York accent said, "Your damn Coke machine or coffee machine isn't working," and it seemed the man was trying to buy coffee from an ATM.
Well, he probably thought that those numbers were like the numbers you see on some vending machines now.
Right, and
like the jukebox style.
He wasn't successful at all buying coffee out of that.
Funny.
Although, you know, they're saying you're going to be able to buy stamps from ATM soon.
Yes, I believe I heard that, which yep. I think is very good.
It's a good idea. They'll come out in the same kind of rectangular shape as a dollar bill will come out, and I think there'll be those peel-off stamps, which is good and bad, you know. Because the sticky substance that they use on stamps today is terrible. You know, they don't stick, for one thing, which is bad, since that's really all they have to do is stick, and they don't do that. But they're going to create these things where you peel them off and you just stick them on, and therefore we'll be free to do something else instead of lick stamps. We'll save that much more time. But we have another piece that we have to throw away that we didn't have to throw away before, you see, and it's more harm to the environment that way.
Mm.
So there's good and bad.
Well, why don't they do something like have deposit amounts on some of those, or on the backing for the stamps, where you can go get like a, if you turn in 1,000 of them, you get a penny.
Oh, gosh, that's an idea.
And you can recycle them that way.
Of course, all the time that we save by not looking stamps we'll lose in collecting all these worthless pieces of junk.
That's right.
But I suppose we've got to keep busy somehow. But we've moved away from the threat of German reunification, which is, I guess, what we should have done in the first place. But
you said threat of German reunification.
Well,
some see it as a threat. Not everybody sees it that way.
I don't see it as a threat, but I do see something else as a threat, which a lot of people aren't aware of, and a lot of people aren't thinking of, and really I wasn't thinking of until recently. But think about this. We've got, we didn't air it today because Radio Moscow, Moscow Mailbag, has not been coming in for some reason. I don't know why. It's crazy over there. Germany is being unified. Okay, you know, I think they can probably manage things fine over there. The Soviet Union, however, seems to be falling apart. I mean, the Russian Republic seems to be threatening to secede to a degree. I mean, they haven't come out and said
the
that.
But Russian Republic?
Yeah, I mean, they're a big republic. They're saying things like, well, you know, Russians come first and everybody else is going to have to wait. And now other republics are saying sort of the same thing. You know, it's looking like it could wind up in some kind of civil war or some kind of, skirmish of some sort. Either way, no matter how you look at it, the Soviet Union is not stable at this point. But they've got enough weapons to destroy the world many times over. Do you feel comfortable with an unstable regime with enough weapons to destroy the world many times over? The threat is not Germany. And I don't like to say the threat is the Soviet Union and sound like I'm on a great scare or something, but the threat is really the nuclear weapons. And now the nuclear weapons, who knows whose hands they can fall into? What if a bunch of religious zealots take over a particular part of the Soviet Union and say, this is God's land here, and we don't care, we can go out like martyrs. They're not going to care if they blow up the whole world because it's part of, their prophecy or whatever. I'm not picking on any particular group because I think any group that believes in that kind of thing is pretty stupid. But it's something to think about, and I think that's the real threat. You see kind of a parallel. I think somebody in the Times wrote something this week about that. There's a parallel between post-World War I Germany and where the Soviet Union is heading now, because the Soviet Union stands to be humiliated in the world. They lose East Germany to NATO and, all kinds of other defeats. The whole system is falling apart. The country, the economy is in tatters. And the morale of the people is not very high. So with all that in mind, who knows what can rise out of it. And the fact of the matter is they have a lot of weapons now, a lot of weapons, which never should have been made in the first place. It was all part of the lunacy of the arms race to start with. So that's what worries me. It didn't worry me a couple of weeks ago because, quite frankly, I didn't think of it. But now it's something that's got me kind of worried. And I'm also kind of worried that the kooks running our government have all these nuclear weapons, too. Still. I mean, why, What are we saving them for? We're saving them for a rainy day, but
it's not going to be a very pleasant rain.
No, it certainly isn't. A lot worse than acid rain, in fact. Well, our phone number is 632-6901. You can tell us what's going on in your life, whether your concerns right now, nuclear war and all that kind of thing is one of them. This is a funny story. Not what I just said. This is a funny story. You'd like this, Jim. In a public relations effort... You could possibly wait until I finish reading the story before you start laughing hysterically. Could maybe make this seem like you hadn't seen the story before.
Sorry.
Which you haven't. You haven't seen the story before.
No.
I'm holding it over here. In a public relations effort gone awry, a newspaper editor who had criticized National Guard flyovers as dangerous was seriously injured after being invited along on a flight exercise in which two jets crashed. I'm not laughing because the guy was seriously injured.
No, I don't think it was.
Damn it, that's a funny story.
The irony is.
Okay, here we go. The two A-7 fighter jets of the South Dakota Air National Guard collided over northwestern Iowa on Wednesday, raining debris on a soybean field. Both pilots and Ward Bushy, executive editor of the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, ejected when the two A-7 fighter jets of the South Dakota Air National Guard collided Wednesday over northwestern Iowa. The pilots were uninjured, but Bushy, who has a broken neck vertebrae, cuts, and burns, was taken to a Sioux Falls hospital where he was in fair condition. Bushy, 41, had written an editorial in August criticizing ceremonial flyovers as noisy and dangerous. The piece apparently led to an invitation to an Air Guard flight.
Wow.
And I guess that just goes to show, when you say something, stick by it. And don't give the other side a chance to prove themselves right, because you'll just get hurt.
And I'm sure we both hope that he recovers.
I'm sure he's going to be a good guest on Donahue when he does recover. Or maybe on this show, too. Hey, let's give him a call in his hospital bed. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. It might be a little late to call somebody in a hospital.
That's true. In South Dakota, I don't know what time they go to sleep there.
It was, what, like 1 hour behind there?
Uh-huh.
So even so, 10, it's what, about a quarter of 10 in probably in South Dakota now. I think that's a little late.
Those South Dakota people, they have an attitude.
You think so?
Yeah, they have a big attitude.
Have you been to South Dakota?
No, never. I never would. I never would go to South Dakota. People have an attitude in South Dakota.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you...
North Dakota is fine. North Dakota is fine. But there's something about South Dakota. I think it's in the earth.
Well, how did you come by this information?
Oh, I've known about it for years.
You've known about it for years. How did you come to know about it?
It's a well-known fact.
Who made it well-known?
I don't know. It's just sort of legendary, passed down through the generations. South Dakota, stay away from that bad neighborhood.
Bad neighborhood?
The whole neighborhood is bad.
There's a neighborhood called South Dakota?
Don't walk through South Dakota at night.
The entire state is known as a neighborhood, and you can walk through it at night?
You'd be pretty stupid if you did, but it's a
pretty small state. Sounds smaller than Rhode Island.
It's bigger than Rhode Island. It's a hell of a lot bigger than Rhode Island.
Yeah, but how can you call it a neighborhood if it's a full state?
I don't know how you can call
state.
It a neighborhood. I mean,
even Rhode Island isn't considered just a neighborhood.
Well, that's not the point, whether it's called a neighborhood or not. It's not a good place. I'd stay away from there if I were you. I really would stay away from there.
Well, I don't know, Eric. Did you feel this way before you went on this 48 hours with no sleep binge?
Well, the fact that I haven't slept in a long... And by the way, let me tell you about that. That was fun, because yesterday I went to the city. This is all part of the hacker meeting.
Sleep deprivation is fun,
In
huh?
fact, let me read the story first, and I'll tell you about the hackers. Because every once a month we have hacker meetings in the city. This is in today's paper. The Justice Department will not appeal the sentence given a Cornell University graduate student who was placed on probation for crippling a nationwide computer network with a rogue program. The student, Robert Morris, was convicted on May 4th in Syracuse on charges of gaining unauthorized access to federal computers. Prosecutors had sought a jail term, but a justice spokesman said today that the sentence given Mr. Morris was enough punishment. That sentence was a the virus was supposed to remain hidden in the computer network, but instead multiplied out of control. Friends said Mr. Morris intended merely to show that he could bypass the security measures in the network. Mr. Tillett said senior officials at the Justice Department decided appealing was unwarranted. As you got up the ladder at the department, it was the feeling that this was a bright kid who had gone astray, according to the Times.
He'd gone astray.
I guess that means you've really gone astray. What point is served by putting him in jail? And I have to agree, the Justice Department is right there. They know when to back off, and that's back way off there. Yeah, and sending a bright kid to jail is never a solution. I always say, anyway.
No, kill him.
Well, that's
just kidding, folks.
In some societies, that is the accepted practice. But we have the 2600 hacker meeting once a month in the city. And yesterday I was driving into the city. It starts at 5 o'clock in Midtown. And I figured, if I started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon from here at Stony Brook, that would be enough time to get into New York City. And boy, was I wrong. Oh, boy. Yeah, it was the worst day of my life as far as traveling in a car. I don't know if you ever tried this, Jim.
Yeah, I know what it's like, especially on this was a Friday on a... fair weather weekend in the spring.
It didn't seem like there was a rush hour going the other way. The rush hour was only going towards the city.
No, I think that's because what was happening to you was you were still in the holdover from the morning rush hour of that.
Maybe
morning.
I was.
No, I'm just kidding about that.
Well, I don't know, because it took me 4 hours to get into the city. 4 hours.
That is actually rather extreme. To leave Stony Brook.
Two and a half of which were in Queens, just trying to get over the Queensboro Bridge.
Really?
Boy, it was awful. And, I don't know how I kept cool throughout it. I mean, I was, I could feel myself about to explode, You're just sitting there in this traffic, and you move maybe an inch every minute. You see traffic lights ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I got stuck on a street, an actual side street once, because I thought it was a shortcut, and it wasn't. You see the light turn green, and nobody moves. Nobody moves anywhere, because 10 miles from here, no one's moving, and there's no way the green light means nothing. Then the light turns red, nobody moves, and the light turns green again. It just keeps happening over and over again. You just say to yourself, how long can I put up with this? How long could I possibly be sitting here for? Your whole life sort of flashes before your eyes. You listen to the radio, you listen to tapes, you read books, you hum to yourself. You go out, you visit with your neighbors and other people that are stuck in the traffic jam. And after a while, you just have to wonder, what have you done to deserve this? You think of people who are... expecting you to be somewhere at a certain time. You're an hour and a half late already, and there's no hope of you even moving another inch in the next, 10 minutes. And it's really, something. It's frustrating. And I don't understand why people in New York don't go crazy a lot more often. I really don't. We're very patient people. We're extremely patient. We put up with a lot,
We do.
But we survive. We get through the day.
Yeah.
And in my case, I got through the night as well, because we sort of hung out all night long and into the afternoon. So that's why I'm still up now. Wow. And it was kind of ironic, because on the way back home, I got stuck in the beach crowd.
Oh.
The beach crowd was going out to all the beaches, and, you know, I was stuck in the traffic jam again. Probably a lot of the same people who had a good night's sleep after the last traffic jam. But I was still up, and it's just, you know, if you look at it in a funny kind of a way, I guess, you know, I mean, 10 years from now, this won't mean all. I mean, it'll still mean something to me, obviously, but it won't mean
disagree.
That much. But you think it'll mean a lot in 10 years?
I think in 10 years, I think what's going to happen to you is, I think this is the beginning of a very, very unfortunate episode in your mental condition. I think that a confluence of circumstances...
I don't need to hear this now.
Oh.
I don't need to hear about my mental conditions now.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that 10 years
from now... That's the listeners are for.
You're going to be stark, raving... mad.
Well, that's the nicest thing anyone said about my present condition, then, because you're implying that I'm not there now.
Well, what I'm saying is that as each day goes by, you're going to get angrier and angrier about having been stuck in the traffic jam until it becomes a complete obsession with you. Until all you're going to be doing is 10 years from now, you're going to be saying, "If only I hadn't been in that traffic jam on June 1st, 1990. If only that hadn't happened, then."
I'll tell you something that annoyed me even more than that. I was coming up to the studio today, okay?
And finding me here, huh?
Well, apart from that, yeah. But you know how occasionally you pass by, like, you know, a wall that's just been painted or something, it says wet paint on the wall?
Yes.
Well, coming up the bridge, the morons, I mean that in the best of ways, the morons here at the State University at Stony Brook painted the steps, and they put a sign on the steps that says wet paint. Now, how in hell are you supposed to avoid steps? You know, you need stuff. You can't go up like 20 steps and just do like an Arnold Schwarzenegger type thing. You know, you've got to walk up the steps. And if it's wet, it's an academic point, because you're going to, you know, get wet.
Yeah, I
so
can
why
understand
your maybe you should paint every other step or something. I don't know.
That's
but they painted all this. I don't even know why they paint steps. Who paints steps? But they decided to paint the steps, and they're all wet, and we've got to get up here to the radio station, and now our feet are blue because they painted them blue, and now we got blue paint all over our shoes.
Well, yeah, but it's just...
I got nice shoes, too.
Well, yeah, the only thing is...
These are good sneakers. They're only 3 years old.
Oh, wow. The only thing is that...
I would have worn my other pair if I'd known this.
Well, what I was going to say was, it's true that it seemed rather mystifying, but there was a way, believe it or not, although it was it could be considered a little circuitous...
Mm-hmm.
To do it without stepping on the wet paint.
You mean walk all the way around the library and over the bridge?
Well, you didn't have to go all the way to the library. What you could do is you could
approach it by air.
Well, no.
A helicopter dropped me off on top of the building.
Well, no, but there was a way to do it. There actually was a way to do it. It was a little circuitous.
Take the secret tunnel system and emerge somewhere. I don't know. But painting steps, folks, come on. Let's get real here.
No, but there was a... Well, I mean, it is a bit mystifying, although I guess the painting of the steps helps avoid them, you know, getting worn away. But there was an alternate route of doing it that actually was provided, so...
Well, I didn't see a map. I didn't see instructions. I just saw a sign that said wet steps. And I'd rather not even talk about it anymore. Folks, give us a call, 632-6901, because... There must be something annoying you that's annoying us, because we're just talking about things that annoy us, and it's I'm sure we're probably annoying quite a few people too, right? Erica 516 is our phone number, 632-6901. We've got that newsletter from the Parents Music Resource Center. I want to get into that and talk about censorship and all that kind of neat stuff. And we've got an exciting episode of the Tripods coming up in just a few minutes. Jim, you weren't here last week when we left Howard Tripod as he was... being cast adrift out of Whitney Island, down somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, and that's quite... I remember this part of the series from years ago. This was, I believe this is the soliloquy episode where Howard Tripod does the most eloquent speech to the meaning of his life and how it's all for naught now that he's cast adrift in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It's sad. Be prepared to cry. Be prepared to scream and throw things and maybe even break some things. But, folks, it's radio drama, and we've never said it was pretty.
No.
You know? And it's only one chapter in many. It's just, it's incredible, the linkage, you know?
Yes.
One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And once you start down the road, there's no turning back.
No, indeed.
And there's no rest stops. There's no McDonald's on the side of the path. Sad, I know. But that's just the way it is. Good evening. Is anyone there?
This is Gorbachev.
This is Gorbachev?
Please, it's Eric Pauly. I think your national mailbag segment is terrific. I called to bear my darkest secrets and raise your rating. My wife does not even know that I am having an affair with Barbara Walras. Yes, Barbara Walras. During the summit meeting, I talked with George Trump, Luke Siamian Bush, both Russian adults, teaching each other Russian and American curse words, and trying to rub off my grave blue stained forehead. Oops. Riva is calling. Coming, my little goo-goo.
Oh, yes. Well, that was a Washington, D.C. connection, I could tell. So that...
had that 202 lilt to it.
Had the 202 lilt to it, but that's something. It's too bad he's not within our listening range, because I would like him, while he's in town, to do some IDs for us.
That would be something.
This is President Mikhail Gorbachev, is that how you say it? And whenever I'm in Stony Brook, I listen to WUSB in Stony Brook.
Yes.
There's not much to say, but, you know, it's good to say. And since that was his voice, it would be nice to, you know, to get it while he's here.
It would. Yeah. It would, yeah.
Forgive me, folks. I'm faltering here because I'm seeing three of everything. And I'm seeing Jim Wiener.
Well, there are three of us in here.
Yeah.
I'm Jim.
Oh, no.
I'm Tim. And I'm...
Good evening.
Slim.
Go ahead.
I thought that the breakup of the telephone company was supposed to make things cheaper.
Oh, apparently this is going to be a phone-related kind of thing, huh?
Well, I paid 50 cents in a payphone for information.
No, you didn't. Not yet.
Yes, I did, and there was no phone book there.
Wait. Information to where?
I was in Amityville.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to get the phone number for Corvette Connection in Bohemia. And I dialed 411, and then the operator came on and said, 50 cents, please.
Now, wait, just one. It wasn't a New York telephone payphone then, was it?
I don't know. It was, you know, one of them payphones.
Was it a 9X payphone, or was it another payphone?
You mean there's two different kinds now?
Oh, boy. Yes, there's many different kinds. There's the evil ones, and there's the familiar-looking ones.
I didn't know that. Well, how would I know?
Well, the evil ones tend to charge you outrageous amounts for things that you're not used to paying for. But New York Telephone wants to charge you for information from payphones real soon, and there's a big fight, to stop them from doing that. So, you know, get on the bandwagon and complain.
What are you going to do?
Letters.
You can't fight G. Hall.
Yes, you can. You can write letters. You can get people on your side.
I can.
Sure you can. Yeah, make people aware of it. You know, nobody knows about this.
How about the weather? When you call 976-1212, you get hit with a commercial, plus you have to pay for that call.
You know what? Okay, you've just reminded me of something. There are phone numbers around. There's one phone number in 212 area code that gives you the weather and the time and a little ad for something that lasts a couple of seconds, but you pay for a regular phone call. You don't have to pay the exorbitant rate. And a call to New York City will cost less than a call to 976. In fact, a call to California sometimes costs less than that. What I'll do is... hopefully I remember next week to bring all those numbers in, and I'll read them off over the air.
Oh.
As a public service.
Plus, one more thing that annoys me. This station on Thursday, they're always talking down nuclear power plants, how bad they are.
Yeah.
And is somebody going to get on the radio station and say why we need them and how bad we are for the environment?
Well, I think you just did.
Well, not enough people are saying it. Too many people are bad for the environment. That's why you need power plants, all those dummies over there on Thursdays.
Well, you know, I see what you're saying. Too many people do ruin things. Maybe if we had some more power plants, we'd have a few less people.
Hey!
Good point. Thanks for calling, though, and it's tripod time.
Hey, don't...
Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off like that, but sometimes that happens. Call us back, 632-6901, but without any further ado, because the tripod groupies get kind of violent. I met some of them in
the
parking lot a couple weeks ago.
Oh, my.
It's very important that we do the tripods on time, and I don't want to make that mistake again.
By the way, WUSB Stony Brook.
Right. That's the radio station. We're going to be taking your calls afterwards. We're going to be talking about censorship, and boy, it's going to be interesting, too, because we've got some neat things to talk about. So stay tuned. To this radio station. And, Jim, I guess this is a good opportunity for you to give the official legal ID and do it with a flourish.
Oh, I thought that was it. But I guess what I should say is that this is Long Island's first station of the 90s, which wants feedback from you, our listeners, and feedback from us in the studio. WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Company, presents the fabulous adventures of the Tripods, one of America's most illustrious families. Today, as we join Howard Tripod, we see that he is still stranded on a canoe, escaping from Whitney Island and going out into the Atlantic Ocean. And we hear Howard say,
"I wish it would get light already. I can't see a single thing in any direction. But even if it was the middle of the day, I probably wouldn't see anything. Just water. I never realized how much water there was in the world. It never seems to end. I wonder if anyone saw me... Oh, that's a big one. I wonder if anybody saw me drifting away from Whitney Island. Maybe they're looking for me right now. I bet the Coast Guard's got a whole fleet out searching, and they've probably got helicopters and radar and everything. Who am I kidding? I bet they haven't even realized I'm missing yet. They were so disorganized over there yesterday. No one even knew I was the star of a motion picture they were getting ready to film. Or the Coast Guard, in any event. I wonder if that French actress ever showed up. Oh, what was her name again? Brigitte LaRue, that's it, yes. Brigitte LaRue. It was really because of her that I agreed to do this film in the first place. Always wanted to meet her. Oh, well, that's the way it goes, I guess. Certainly getting hungry. Haven't eaten since yesterday morning. I could use some water, too. It's kind of ironic, I guess, having all this water around me. What was that? Oh, my goodness. Makes you think, though, with all this water, not being able to have a drop. Oh! What was that? Sounded like a sonic boom or something. Are those seagulls? Hey, there must be some sort of life here if I see seagulls. They're heading out where I'm going. There must be something there. They don't fly out to sea. Hey, wait a minute. Is it starting to get light? Well, it's about time. I feel like I've been out here for hours. Hey, wait a minute. I have been out here for hours. My goodness, when is this going to end? There go the seagulls. For some reason, Kathy just flashed into my mind. I wonder if she knows what happened. I kind of hope not. She doesn't take things like that well at all. When I left, she was still so depressed about Uncle Jonathan breaking her entire china collection the last time he was out. If she finds out about this, that I'm drifting out to sea, I don't know what she's going to do. It's really such... I think I see something up ahead. What is that? Could it be land? It's still pretty dark, but I think I can see trees or something over there. Yes! Yes, those are trees. I can't believe it. Apparently there's another island all the way out here. I wonder if anyone lives out here. Let me try to maneuver this canoe over there. Oh, boy. That's not too difficult. I think I'm getting pretty close to land. Oh, I seem to have reached land. Yes, I have. I can't go any further. This looks like a very big island. I'm going to get out of the boat and see if I can walk ashore. What is cold. The sun's just starting to come up now.
a nice beach. It's a feeling of desolation. There's absolutely nobody around. I'll have to start exploring, see if I can find any sort of civilization. Oh, I can see for miles. I can't see... Wait a second. Is that a figure up ahead? I think I do see... Wow. That has to be one of the largest people I've ever seen, if that's a person. He must be at least 10 feet tall. Well, I've got nothing to lose to try and talk to him and get out of here, get back home or something. Hello? Well, sir? Mister? What? Who? Whatever you are? Hello? Well, let me go up to him. He seems to be looking at me. Hello, I seem to have just landed on this desert island, and I was wondering if maybe you could help me get back or tell me where I am.
What do you do here?
My name's Howard Tripod. I was on Whitney Island. We were filming a motion picture. Me and this French actress, Brigitte Leroux. And I was taking a boat ride before we did the film, and my boat became adrift. You see, I come from Long Island. I didn't grow up there or anything. I was born in Big Bear City, but we had to move out to Long Island.
What do you do here?
And so, Howard appears to have found some form of civilization on a strange island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. How will his family back on Long Island react? And what about Brigitte Leroux? You'll want to be with us next time when we may answer some of these questions on the Tripod Family. For Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms, this is Don Topeka.
If second sin progress is ours once more, now that we have the neutron bomb, it burns some quick and clean and dirty gone. Away with the theft and know me, but no less value to property. The sunset war at perfect sense. Oh,
recording already in progress.
That's what I said. The Dead Kennedys here on WUSB in Stony Brook, brain damage, and that record would certainly get a warning label. Thoughts and ideas that really should be controlled. Of course, I followed the heart-wrenching episode of the Tripod Family, and I don't know if anyone out there didn't feel like they were right there on the boat with Howard in all his agony and pain. And even after all this time, it still brings back those feelings. Oh, can hardly wait till next week to find out just what in hell happens. 632-6901. See who's out there. Good evening. Is anyone there? Is anyone there? I don't see anything wrong with the phone here. No, there doesn't seem to be anyone there. Okay, well, we're going to go to the next line. Good evening. Oh, that's something weird. What's going on here? Good evening.
Hello, man. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
All right, pleasure. How you doing?
I'm just fine.
Oh, so, what are you guys talking about tonight? Anything that's,
Well, I don't know. Talking about... Well, nothing really. What's on your mind?
I don't know, man. Everything.
Yeah?
Just life in general sucks.
Yeah, well, that's too bad.
Yeah. Tell me about it. How's your life?
Oh, it's okay. I mean, you know, I can't complain. I got stuck in the traffic jam, and I'm up for 2 days straight, but other than that, I'm fine.
How's the women?
They're reasonable, you know.
You getting any?
Well, let me transfer you over to the helpline, which you obviously need.
Hello, this is the phone mail system.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy her. It's 14 minutes after 11 o'clock, and Jim, I brought in the record, which is a newsletter from the Parents Music Resource Center, the Spring 1990 edition. Now, you folks know who the Parents Music Resource Center is, PMRC, the people that want to rate records and take it a few steps further than that, I imagine. And what I've got here is the whole newsletter. You see, we were able to kid them into thinking that, one of my friends was able to kid them into thinking that he was a member of the New York City School Board. So he gets videotapes, he gets books and newsletters from them and everything. So we know what they're up to at all times. And we also have a list of their entire board of directors. And, the founders, of course, Mrs. Susan Baker, Mrs. Tipper Gore, Mrs. Pam Hauer, and Mrs. Sally Nevius, Executive Director Jennifer Norwood. There's all kinds of other names here, too. But let's take a look at the National Advisory Board, which I think is pretty interesting. We have Mrs. Ann Asher, who is president of Ann Asher Incorporated, which I guess makes sense. Mrs. Mabel H. Brandon, Mrs. Esther Cooper Smith, Robert Demski, M.D., San Antonio, Texas, Mr. Vince Dooley, athletic director, University of Georgia, David Elkind, Ph.D., professor of child study and resident scholar at Medford, Massachusetts, Mr. Al Kasha. How do you pronounce C-E-I-L?
Seal.
Seal.
Like Celia.
Like seals on the beach.
Well, yeah.
Okay, this is Seal Kasha, interior designer, okay. Paul King, M.D., adolescent medical director in Memphis, Tennessee. Mr. Mario Machado, television broadcaster. Thomas Radecki, M.D., research director, National Coalition on Television Violence. Interesting. Television Violence, the initials of TV. Anyway, Tom Shannon Esquire, counsel. Mrs. Candy Stroud, journalist. Joseph Stussy, Ph.D., professor of music. Mrs. Sheila Walsh, television host and recording artist. Mr. and Mrs. Pat Williams, president and general manager of Orlando Magic. And are you ready for this one? The Honorable Andrew Young, former mayor, City of Atlanta, Georgia. And also, he used to be the U.S. ambassador to the U.N.?
That's correct.
Was it the U.N. ambassador to the U.S.?
It's the U.S. ambassador.
One of those.
To the U.N.
But I don't understand. Andrew Young is on the PMRC?
May I see that for a moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not lying. It's right
I believe you. But
Andrew Young, you know, he's the, he was rather outspoken. If you recall, he's a black mayor. Was he the first black mayor of Atlanta, or was he the second? It might have been the second.
I think the second.
But while he was the ambassador at the UN, he made quite a controversy for speaking to the PLO, I believe. That was a number of years ago. it just doesn't seem right. I mean, that he is also part of this conservative group. I mean, I would call them a very conservative group, wouldn't you?
Well, on the whole, I guess their image would be... It would not be incorrect to think of the group as conservative, but I can see why some people would... who would not per se be considered conservative, but would join this group. I don't know that I feel completely comfortable with what this group stands for, but I understand the motivations of some of the people who might want to get involved, and some of the motivations or motives are not necessarily all bad.
Well,
they
mean well, yes, but what they're saying is very dangerous. What they're saying is, you know, it amounts to... Well, okay, case in point, Dear Abby this week. I'm ready for this. Dear Abby had this letter, and she was, a couple of weeks ago, she responded to somebody saying, right on to those people that object to TV programs like Married with Children, and they respond by organizing these boycotts of all the products that are associated, that they run commercials for during those shows. So basically any show that you don't like, you organize a boycott of the products to get it off the air. Now, this Dear Abby said, yeah, that's a good idea. But then this person wrote in this week, and this is what they said. Dear Abby, you are absolutely and positively wrong in your advice to Mother of Six. I've used such strong language because this goof is monumental. What if I don't like something I read in your column? Should I write to the publisher of my newspaper and tell him to cancel my subscription? Or should I contact the newspaper's largest advertisers and enlist their aid in coercing the editors to print only what I deem appropriate? Soon we would have either no media or only meaningless fluff, offensive to no one. Also, no Dear Abby. Let me tell you what offends me. I am offended by this growing idea that we can control what people, media included, say by simply labeling it offensive. Freedom of speech is our first and foremost civil right, guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. You don't like what someone says? Tough. Don't look, don't listen, or don't read it. But don't try to shut them up. Information isn't dangerous. Suppression of information is. Now, very little TV programming is intended for four-year-olds. They don't have jobs and they don't spend money. I couldn't believe you would encourage economic coercion nationwide as a means of censorship to help one parent abrogate her responsibility. But don't shut up. Just think a little and keep on writing. That letter was from David Miller of Fayetteville, North Carolina. And Dear Abby responded, Dear Mr. Miller, all right, I'll take 10 whacks with a rolled-up facsimile of the U.S. Constitution. I hate it when she says things like that. And as one of the original members of People for the American Way, I ought to be ashamed of myself, and I am. And I'm glad she admitted that. I'm glad she was able to see the importance of this, because every time you disagree with something or you think something is wrong, you know, you can't shut it up. You have to respect its right to exist. I mean, I come in contact with a lot of imbeciles over the course of any particular day, and I don't object to their right...
Why did you look over at me when you said that?
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry.
You're the only person in the room, but I didn't, you know, I never questioned their right to say what they have to say, you know? You can't just shut people up unless you're afraid of them, unless you're afraid of something that they're going to come up with.
Well, I think it's better rather than trying to coerce someone into not saying something just because you don't like it. I agree with you that it's better to exercise one's own freedom of speech to speak out against something that they disagree with rather than just try to silence what they disagree with, which would... start to erode the First Amendment. I think it's better to use the First Amendment, use the freedom of speech to make one's own opinion known, rather than stifle someone else's opinion.
By all means, get your own opinion out, but don't shut someone else up. And I think we've been, and by we, I mean people that object to labeling of records and having things pulled off TV because some people don't like them. I think we've been far too passive. We haven't been strong enough. We haven't been loud enough. And it's high time, with all this this Mapplethorpe stuff going on, it's high time that we start speaking up, because pretty soon, it's at this rate, it's going to look a lot different, you know? We're talking national grants for art. You have to swear that you're not going to have anything that could be objectionable to Jesse Helms, and that's about 45% of great artworks, I would say, is objectionable to Jesse Helms. I hate Jesse Helms. I don't mind saying that. I like saying that, in fact. Now, I mean, the guy is... he has no conception of what art is all about. I mean, he's a politician. He's an arch-conservative. And he has his own way of looking at things, fine. But I really object to somebody foisting their opinion on other people. Now, this is what the Parents Music Resource Center says in their newsletter. You can help. Join our media watch. Number one, monitor your local radio and TV broadcasts carefully, and if offensive material is aired, write down the objectionable words, /songs/scenes, name and date of program, and its commercial sponsors. Two, write a letter of protest to your local station manager and the program sponsors, giving specific details. Send to the Federal Communications Commission, National Association of Broadcasters, and to your elected representatives at the state and national levels. Three, write to the executive director of the National Television Association, whose members, cable systems operators, carry the MTV channel, and the president of MTV if you have complaints about the programming excesses on cable television, specifically MTV or music videos. And four, write to the individual recording companies and to the president of the Recording Industry Association of America with copies to the PMRC if you find labeling decisions by the companies to be inadequate. Now, you have to wonder, how many people have done this? Even if only 100 people around the country fall for this garbage and do this, that's 100 people against nobody doing the opposite. Nobody writing to representatives saying, you know, I believe in freedom of speech. I believe I should have the right to listen to what I want to listen to and watch what I want to watch. If I don't like something, I can turn it off or turn the channel. But shutting somebody up is not right. How many people wrote letters like that to their representatives? You know, not as many, because there's no organized campaign to do that. And that's what's scary, because the representatives look at what they get. They look at the mail they get. They look at what people seem to be saying. And they say, well, 100 people wrote to me and said this, and only 3 people wrote and said that. That means by a margin of 100 to 3, this is what my constituents want. And, you know, it's not adequate. You know, I don't think it's accurate. I really don't.
I think that... some time back, we were discussing this, and my thoughts keep coming back to the idea that although, as we say, the labeling system might be very well intentioned as a means of alerting parents to material that they might want to monitor or might want to check on before their children listen to the material, there's a couple of problems I have with it. First of all, I think that I saw a cartoon that I don't remember where I saw it. It was very clever because it showed different sections of music, of different types of music, in a record store, and it was labeled, had labels like jazz, pop, R&B, dance music, and then it had a sign that said something like questionable lyrics section. And the cartoon showed that all the kids in the store were running over to the section labeled questionable lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
What I think that was illustrating was that as soon as somebody puts some type of taboo implied label on something, people are going to, who are supposedly, let's say, young people, teenagers, children, are going to, who are the ones targeted to be insulated from that material, they are going to, many of them, redouble their efforts as much as possible to expose themselves to that material, simply because it is now set aside in its own category, so
but
it almost defeats the purpose.
Some people who run music stores will say, you know, because we don't want a bunch of angry senators'
right.
wives running in here, we're not going to get any of these records at all, and then these
right.
kids won't be able to go in there and look
right.
at them.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That's the real danger. Is that kind of, it'll be cut off a level above, you know, where you would ordinarily see it, and
exactly.
you'll never get to see it.
Exactly. That leads to the next thing. You know, that was, you know, that leads to that ultimate step of the material not being dispensed at all, and it having a chilling effect on free expression.
Did you see Calvin and Hobbes this week?
No, I didn't.
It was a great cartoon, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, where Calvin's being read a bedtime story by his father, and he asks, is there any violence in this story, any kind of swear words or satanic rituals or anything like that? And his father answers no to all these things, and the kid says, well, what makes you think I'm going to like it? It's incredible.
Well, yeah, that goes along with that. But just a couple of the things I was going to say briefly about the labeling issue is that who is to say at what point one draws a line and says, this is questionable? Because all of a sudden, a very, very nebulous area is being created where a judgment is going to be made that could influence heavily the distribution of a particular record based on, I ask, whose judgment of this being questionable or not questionable? And finally, point is that I think labeling, although I understand the frustration of many parents, I'm not minimizing that,
uh-huh,
of trying to avoid their kids falling in the thrall of negative influences. I think that a cut-and-dried labeling system may do more harm ultimately than good for the fabric of American society by having a chilling effect on free speech.
Well, any form of categorization will do that, any form of trying to cut something off. If you're concerned about your kids listening to a particular kind of music, you need to speak to them one-on-one and, you know, understand where they're coming from. Try to understand why they like it. Maybe they'll try to understand why you don't. And if you still disagree, at least you'll respect each other, and that's really what it all boils down to, is whether or not you respect people who are different from you. Now, before we go to the phone calls, and we have one open line left, 632-6901 is our phone number. So I'm very briefly go over these videotapes that they're giving out from the PMRC. Rising to the Challenge is one that I've seen it. It's a 33-minute video produced by the PMRC and Teen Vision. Takes a look at today's popular music, shows examples of album covers, song lyrics, teen magazines, music videos, and concerts, which depict everything from satanic rituals to rock stars promoting drug use to lyrics advocating suicide. Again, they were picked on Suicide Solution by Ozzy Osbourne, which does not advocate suicide, I'm sorry. And it's the second updated version, they say. Also, they have Satanism Research Packet, a complete packet of information containing lyrics, sheets of songs which promote satanic rituals and sacrificial rites, a law enforcement primer to occult-related crimes, clippings of crimes connected with Satanism, and heavy metal music, transcripts from shows dealing with Satanism, important information on satanic holidays and ritual practices. It might be good for anybody into the Satanism to order this, too. Let's Talk Rock, a parent's primer, a handbook filled with advice from experts on how to handle teenage drug use, rock concert violence, teenage suicide, and more, designed to accompany Rising to the Challenge video. However, it can stand alone, free of charge with each video ordered. Music, a health issue, a medical pamphlet containing advice on warning signs related to suicide, hearing loss from rock concerts, ways to use music to communicate with children, and concerns from pediatricians on the possible harmful health effects of some messages in lyrics and music videos. Influence of media on adolescents, a printed proceedings from a medical symposium sponsored by the PMRC, American Academy of Pediatrics, and National Mental Health Association, contains articles and studies from noted child health experts and psychiatrists on the influence of media on adolescents, including concerts, television, films, radio, and cable. Press kit, student information packet, a complete package of information including surveys, studies, articles, quotes, sample lyrics, news releases, and more. And a complete history of the organization from its inception in 1985 to the present. And finally, a rock music slide presentation. 40-minute slideshow, complete with carousel and accompanying script. Slides depict album covers, articles, fan magazine photos, and concert stage shows. Longer, more detailed version of the video cassette Rising to the Challenge, explicit language and photos. Updated frequently. Inquire about prices, they say. And this one over here is kind of weird. Band information. And this is something I wonder what it really is. For lyrics, concert information, news articles, and printed transcripts of interviews with musicians, call or write the PMRC. Please specify the names of the band or recording artist. This service is free of charge. Now,
I think I know what that is.
Okay, tell me.
What probably happens is that if an individual wants to know the kind of material, generally, that a band produces, they supply the name of the band to PMRC, and they let them know, as far as PMRC figures, what the band is about, whether it's in a particular music genre, what kind of lyrics they
have. So they have it all categorized already. Somewhere there's a master list of what all these...
It may be. Or they're ready to research it. I think that is one of those two things.
Okay, there's a phone number here. Do you think they'll tell us if we pick a band? Let's pick a band.
I think they would.
Let's pick a band. Let's call them up and see what they say. I don't know if they're open now. They might not be. It's Saturday
probably
night.
Probably not.
Probably out having an orgy somewhere.
No, I don't think so.
PMRC people.
You've reached the Parents Music Resource Center. Our office hours are between 9 and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Please leave a message. Let us know if we are able to call you back collect if you are calling long distance. If you have not received a return call within 24 hours, please call us again during our office hours. Thank you.
Well, the answering machine's hackable, but I'm not going to say anything about that. No, only kidding, folks. 632-6901. Good evening. Hello?
Hey, you're going to catch up again. Whenever I am in the Stony Brook area, I listen to WUSB Radio all day and all night. My favorite program is Brain Damage. One second, you are listening to WUSB in the 90.1. If you hold on, you can hear my baby girl being born, hold on.
I thank you very much, Mickey. Yes, he always comes through in the clutch, doesn't he? Good evening.
Sorry, I'd just like to voice my opinion on the whole PMRC thing. I really think it stinks.
Yeah, sure it does, doesn't it?
Because what I don't understand is, by putting labels on records, they're getting almost the exact opposite effect because it gives like a certain mysterious, thing to it. Makes a kid think, oh, I wonder why they're putting this label on there. It's backfiring right on them. So.
Well, except for the fact that it's going to be harder for you to get records that have labels on them. It's going to, slowly and then more rapidly get harder because stores will be pressured not to carry those records. Where are you going to find them?
Right. What can I do to take part in going against the PMRC?
Well, right now... They have every right to exist. They have every right to express themselves in whatever way they see fit. I think we all have to deal with it on our own,
Yeah. I don't know. It just really pisses me off. I can't believe... It's like these people have nothing better to do than just to, bother other people.
Well, control is the name of the game here. If you can control somebody's listening habits, it's a power trip. It's nothing more than that. I wish I had an address, but I can give you the PMRC phone number. How's that? Maybe they'll tell you who's opposing them. They're in Virginia. All these groups seem to be in Virginia, the Christian Broadcasting Network and what was the other one? Tammy Faye Baker? Weren't they in somewhere out there in Virginia? Anyway, these people are in Arlington, and their phone number is 703-527-9466. Their fax number is 703-527-9468. And I suspect 9467 belongs to them, too, but they don't list it anywhere. Oh, I know. They probably have two lines at 9466. 9466 jumps to 9467, and then 9468 is the fax machine. I have it all figured out. I even know how they have it set up, too. They probably have the fax machine over by the door as you walk in. That way you can check for faxes as soon as you come in at 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday when they open. That's the PMRC. I can tell you all about them, but I can't tell you about the opposition because, as far as I know, it doesn't really exist. But hopefully it will soon. Oh, we have a lit switchboard here. 632-6901, area code 516. You'll get a busy signal now, but keep trying, and you'll get through. Voice your opinion, because your opinion is what matters to us. Good evening. I thought it was funny, too. Good evening.
It's only me again.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sorry I hung up on you before.
Well, you got other things to do.
Well, I sure do.
How come in Newsday, you ever look at the TV listings?
Sometimes.
They got Max in there. They got HBO. They got every single cable station and every commercial station is listed in there except Playboy Channel. What do you suppose that is?
Used to be listed.
I know. It's not anymore. I haven't asked them about that. And they also took out Dr. Ruth Westheimer's column.
Well, why did they do that?
Well, I never wrote them about it because I already had enough trouble with them with that letter that I had wrote them. I think what you have is you have, like, the churches behind all of this because you got this Victorian-era moral breakdown that they're worried about.
It's something you see in so many places now. In fact, the New York Times, I read about it in Newsday, actually. They refused to print a title of a film because they think it's objectionable. And the film is entitled How to Make Love to a Negro Without Getting Tired. And they refused to print that, thinking it's objectionable. But the fact of the matter is, the film was made by two black people, and they're really upset that they're not printing the title of the film, and they think it's censorship. The New York Times is just simply saying How to Make Love and leaving it at that, while Newsday is printing the whole title of the film. We have our own ways of expressing ourselves, and it's up to us as individuals to decide whether it's acceptable or not. But whether it's a newspaper, whether it's senators' wives, whether it's some kind of a governmental commission or an arts endowment agency, they don't have the right to decide for you unless you give them that right.
Well, a national endowment for the arts thing, that's the taxpayers are behind that a little bit, so I really don't know what to say on that.
Well, you know, if you tell taxpayers your tax money is being used to fund pornography, they'll say, I don't want that to happen. But that's not the same thing as saying to the taxpayers, well, you know, look at this, decide for yourself, is this art or is it not? And, if you tell them it's pornography, they're going to say, oh, it's pornography. If you show it to them, then they'll either say it's pornography or they'll say, no, it's not pornography. It's something else. Maybe I don't like it, but it's art of its own kind.
But you don't know how rough that whole thing is. You see, I draw, so I can really relate to this. If I had to depend on funds and I knew that my art was being suppressed or something, I don't know, My ability as an artist would be totally stymied, and I couldn't do it. I'd have to just freelance and forget about it. I couldn't depend on the National Endowment for the Arts if I had to worry about somebody saying, well, you can't do that. It's too far out. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. You got to be free. That's what art is.
Uh-huh. That's what it's all about, and I've said this many times, and you have government starting to regulate art.
Bad news.
It's a bad trip, yeah, for sure. I mean, if we can't decide ourselves what we like and what we don't like, we're not very good human beings, are we? If you delegate somebody to decide that for you, it's...
Yeah, people are afraid. They're afraid because they're ignorant.
Well, you know, it's something that can be changed.
It's not easy, believe me. You talk to some of these fundamentalist Christians and you'll think you're in another world.
Well, it's not just fundamentalist Christians. It's fundamentalists of all kinds.
But I've talked to people in front of abortion clinics, these pro-lifers, and they're pretty far gone.
Uh-huh. You know, I was in a restaurant last night in the city, and somebody was passing around, this is really disgusting, someone was passing around pictures of aborted fetuses. They're part of this anti-choice. I'm not going to call them pro-life, but an anti-choice group that was trying to get people to, you know, say that abortion is bad and horrible, and they're showing you all these pictures of aborted fetuses. Somebody I was with said, you know, I'd like to make one of these too, except I'd like to show pictures of these 4-year-old kids with cigarette burns. and kids of heroin addicts and thrown out windows and burned in ovens and that kind of thing.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, sometimes you got to be, be confrontational.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because these people have got nothing to lose by going up there and marching around. They got nothing to do but march in front of abortion clinics. It doesn't cost them anything to do that.
Well,
Go ahead and spend your money on something or help somebody who's already here, has got problems. Don't stand there and annoy people. If it's my wife or something and she wants to have an abortion, she's not your baby factory.
Right. Well, I mean, they've got every right to demonstrate, but they don't have any right to block entrances, you know, and prevent people from doing this.
The same people that are writing letters against Married with Children. Believe me, these people are lost cause.
Okay, well, it's time. It's time for the art world to stand up and say enough already. You know, to make a public stink about all of this.
Not easy, Eric, because I got a friend who's an artist, and he just spends all his time in his room doing all of this far-out art, and I tell him, look, do you know what's going on out there? He says, I don't have to worry about it. I got guys like you out there who'll take care of the politics for me. I don't like that attitude.
No, because lots of times, you know, it's hard to tell people to take a stand on something, but it's going to come down to that.
Yeah.
Strength is in numbers, you know.
I'm going to go.
Thanks for calling. Jim, I brought the WBAI folio with me this month. WBAI is that other radio station that's a non-commercial station in New York. And they have kind of an objectionable program guide. It's interesting. They printed a Robert Mapplethorpe picture on the front cover. They got permission from the Robert Mapplethorpe estate. And they printed a picture there, and they also printed a picture... They don't have page numbers, but it's under a section called It's Not Art. And, Jim, perhaps you could describe your reaction upon seeing that picture.
Oh, on the picture that says It's Not Art?
Yeah, that picture right there.
You want me to describe the picture?
Well, you don't have to describe the picture too much, but, you know, just...
Well, I'll just say that it's a picture...
It is another Robert Mapplethorpe picture, let's put it that way.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. They're both... oh, wait, maybe it's not.
I don't think so.
Because it says detail of a piece by Alan Frame, mm-hmm. So maybe it's not. I'm sorry. Alan Frame is a writer and photographer who lives in New York.
It's a picture showing male frontal nudity.
I think that pretty much wraps it up. Yeah, it's... which is something that a lot of people have problems with. I mean, it doesn't seem to be as much of a problem with female frontal nudity in films and everything like that. But... I don't know. There's something different, and when it comes to gay and lesbian things, which is the front cover of this this particular folio, this particular program guide, a lot of people have major violent reactions to that. And I think what WBAI is doing is they're sort of forcing the issue. They're sort of throwing it onto the front page and saying, "Look, we've got the right to do this, damn it, and we're going to do it." You know, it's almost like war. But I'm just wondering, do you think this is going to turn off a lot of people? Or do you think it's going to you know, get the issue spoken about like it should be?
Well, let's say you mean
the whole idea.
The whole idea?
Yeah.
I think that I think it will bring more people into the discussion. Some may be offended. Because I know that some people are offended by, let's see, on the cover, it's a, I guess it's an interracial picture of two gay men.
Right.
And I know that those are elements that sometimes...
I mean, there's nothing obscene.
Historically have bothered people. I'm personally not disturbed by either
there
picture.
Are no, there's no sexual organs here. There's nothing, no four-letter words.
No.
But people would ban this picture simply because of the idea that it expresses. You see, and that's... You got to hold this picture up to a PMRC-type organization and say, is this dangerous? Is this something that you would ban? Two people hugging each other is really all it is.
Yeah, you see, that's how I look at it. Now, you see, what I think will happen is more people will get involved in the dispute because some people will be offended, but other people who have heard about the brouhaha but haven't actually seen this.
I'm getting people filing in looking at the picture.
but other people who maybe have heard all about the brouhaha but really haven't seen material explicitly might look at it and say, gee, what's the big deal? Why do people want to actually ban this? In other words, my personal feeling about this is that where someone... My personal feeling about what's judged correct or not correct is as long as the people involved in something are consenting, the people who are involved in the making of a picture are consenting, and as long as it's not exploitation of children, then I don't have a problem with it. But, you see, beyond
children
that...
Children or anybody that doesn't have the ability to make a decision
right,
on their
exactly,
own.
Right, exactly. Beyond that, I think it comes down... more to a question of taste.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody finds either of these pictures not to their taste, I think they have a right for them personally, in a private context, not to find this thing to their taste. But I don't think that because somebody finds one of these pictures not to their taste, that they should necessarily then make the generalization that it is in and of itself wrong to have these pictures exist, or that the activity that the picture may imply or mm-hmm. show is necessarily wrong. And I think that is the, in at least some cases, the what I would call the giant leap that people make, and then they go further and say, this has to be eliminated. And I could understand someone's sentiment of saying, let's say, this is just a supposition here, I'm not even suggesting that it has to be done, or that I'm necessarily absolutely correct. And this is just one possible scenario I'm working out here. Let's say somebody subscribes to WBAI. They get the folio sent to them.
Mm-hmm.
They, let's say, have children. They look at the picture on the front cover. They look at the picture inside. And let's say they contact WBAI. I can understand them contacting, and don't think there's anything wrong with them contacting WBAI, possibly. This is just a scenario, because I'm not even necessarily saying that WBAI is wrong in doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see, let's say, a parent saying, hi, WBAI, listen. I get this folio sent to my house, and sometimes my kid sees the mail before I get to see the mail. And, you know, I didn't expect that you'd necessarily be printing pictures like this based on my prior experience with the WBAI folio. Now, I mean, what I'm saying now might not even be an accurate scenario, because maybe WBAI maybe has printed some pictures where maybe a parent of somebody might be aware, well, they might get pictures that are would be considered by some, quote, explicit, and they might want to make sure that they have explained the context of it to their kid first, whatever. What I'm saying is that, let's assume they say, I didn't expect to see this, I just want to let you know that if you plan to do this in the future, it might create a problem. You might want to think about the effect it's having on some people vis-a-vis what their kid is exposed. Again, and I'm not even, I mean, I'm making this full of all kinds of qualifications, but I'm saying that I could see somebody just saying that, but not saying, I want to shut down WBAI,
well,
or whatever.
Believe me, I'm sure they've thought about this at quite some length, and they've weighed the pros and cons of having a child look at this picture of two people hugging each other on the front cover and the effects it'll have on that child's life from seeing that kind of picture.
And I'm not even necessarily saying it's going to affect the child badly.
And the effects of not printing a picture like this, not forcing the issue, and just allowing all these censorship groups to just have free reign over everything and just sort of handing them everything and saying, go ahead, censor us because we're not going to fight back. It's, you know, I'm a publisher too, and I'm tempted to publish things that I know will offend some people just because I've got the right to do it, and I've got to preserve that right.
I don't really
want to, but it's something that you have to preserve. You have to protect that right.
I would tend to agree with you. I would tend to think, in the sense that WBAI probably did give it a long thought, and I think they did weigh the pros and cons, and I can understand them deciding that there's more pros than cons to it.
Now, I want to tell you about the Rock Rating Report, which is something that the PMRC is also promoting. It's a monthly newsletter designed to provide parents with detailed information about current popular music and music videos. They call it the RRR. I'll just call it Rock Rating Report. Sounds better. It's based on the premise that music has a strong influence on human behavior, but individual parents should make decisions for their own children. It is hoped that the Rock Rating Report can serve as a basis for intelligent family dialogue about pop music in general, and eventually help to improve the overall state of popular music as an important element of our culture. Just got this terrible ache in my gut. Rock Rating Report aims to provide parents with information about music on the radio and television. It is not censorship. It is information. The editors take no official position regarding the current overall state of popular music. That is for you, the parent, to decide. And to prove that, let's listen to what they say about the song Come On, Get My Love by D-Mob. This is what they say. Rock Rating Report. Let's be blunt. The vacancy of this video is so pervading that we are pressed to write an interesting paragraph about it. For example, do we discuss the subtleties of the repetitive lyric, "Come on, get my love," or should we focus on the only visually striking feature of the piece, the singer's tight sweater? Perhaps we should discuss the utter emptiness of the music and its probable origins on the hard drive of some misguided soul's personal computer. Or maybe we should analyze the monotonous, awkward dancing, which conjures up images of a director exhorting, "Keep it up, girls." Silly? No, you don't look silly. You're doing fine. Cut? That's a take. While dance music has never enjoyed a reputation as the most cerebral of musical forms, this song probes moronic depths that few men have dared to explore. In fact, the video would seem much more appropriate if it were lengthened and marketed as an exercise tape. The singer might not seem quite as self-conscious if there were a purpose behind the fact that she does nothing but jump around like a wild animal. And best of all, there would be no loss of lyrical content if the current words were replaced by 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, keep those legs moving now. Okay, again, the editors take no official position regarding the current overall state of popular music. Another song from Tears for Fears, Sowing the Seeds of Love. And we'll take a couple of calls after that. 632-6901, running out of time here. This song has been around for a little while, but the video still receives occasional airplay on MTV, and deservedly so. Although some might describe Sowing the Seeds of Love as a direct purloin of late Beatles psychedelia, it is also a highly creative tribute to a musical style. A successful tribute to any particular genre must integrate the important elements of it into the artist's personal style. Tears for Fears accomplishes this with apparent ease. The Beatles' influences are obvious, but the comparisons become secondary to the artistic quality of the song and arrangement. The song includes a middle section that successfully does what few pop songs even attempt. It flows through a number of related musical motifs using orchestrations designed solely to highlight the musical and lyrical flow. In other words, we see a refreshing willingness to orchestrate to the idea rather than to the expectation. We hear a baritone saxophone sound, a tenor saxophone sound, a trumpet, and varying guitar sounds all where they actually belong to make the musical point, not simply randomly chosen for the sake of self-indulgence. And this musical honesty extends to the video, which is a free-form combination of real and animated effects, reinforcing the range of emotions heard through the song. So, thumbs up to Tears for Fears and Sowing the Seeds of Love. So if you need something to tell you what's good and what's bad, that's something that the Parents Music Resource Center seems to like. It'll cost you, let's see, what will it cost? $25 to subscribe to, is that right? No, it's $14.95, I'm sorry, $14.95 to subscribe to the Rock Rating Report. And note, the Rock Rating Report is not a publication of the Parents Music Resource Center. However, after reviewing the newsletter, the PMRC recommends this resource to concerned parents and individuals. Good evening.
Yes, hi. I really know this doesn't have anything to do with what you're talking about, but does beer go bad?
Well, it depends on whose possession it's in. Good evening. Well, folks, I'm going to close out the show by just saying you deserve what you get, because believe me, the PMRC thrives on the kind of calls we've gotten tonight. They really do. Ignorance, people don't care. What can I say? Should I give this person a chance?
Sure.
All right. Good evening.
Oh, yeah, so I'd like to comment on the PMRC.
All right.
I really think it's, you know, it's a really bad attitude that they have with everything, you know, as far as censoring all the albums and everything.
Uh-huh.
What do you think?
Well, I think I've expressed what I think pretty much.
Oh, well, maybe...
What kind of music do you listen to?
Me, personally, I listen to death metal.
Death metal? Well, you know that Power Surge is coming on next, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, how would you like it if that show was taken off the air because the PMRC didn't like it? They didn't like all these satanic references.
What can I do to get these bastards behind bars?
Well, I don't know if we can go that far, but I'll give you their address. You can write them a nice, lengthy letter. And tell you what, do this, okay? Listen to the radio... read your newspapers, look for people that are objecting to this, and communicate with your friends.
It ain't right for them to label stuff. You have to be 18 years old to buy a record.
Can you believe that?
It ain't right.
It's not right. Talk to people in record stores. Tell them you don't like this, and you won't go there if they start labeling records.
It's really ridiculous. I mean, if someone's going to kill themselves by listening to a record, I mean, there has to be something wrong with this person in the beginning.
Exactly. Very good point. That's exactly it.
Right, for the artists themselves, but they're putting the artists through and the record company through, and it's really giving metal and all styles of music a real bad, you know, thing.
I know metal does not deserve this bad reputation, but but they're getting it from these people that don't understand it. I mean, do you think they really understand metal music at all?
You don't think so, because there's a lot of bands out there that, you know, are really trying really to make it out there, because it's really hard business to get through, and I'm trying to do it myself.
Uh-huh.
And it's not making it easier on me or anyone else out there that's trying to do it.
No, people say, oh, metal, that's that satanic stuff. We don't want to get associated with that.
They want to run and do whatever they want to do, and it's not right.
It certainly isn't.
I think they should really sit back and think about what's going on. If they think, you know, the kid's going to take their lives, they better get help and not just think, oh, well, because of the music the kid's listening to, because it's not right.
Right. It's not going to be the metal music that drives them over the edge. It's probably going to be something the parents say.
Is it heavy metal, or do you listen to all the styles?
Well, you know, I listen to metal. I don't listen to it all the time, obviously, but I do listen to Raz's show, and it's neat. It's misunderstood, just like any kind of
styles,
music.
And I really don't think it's right. Basically, it's really, they're limiting it to really to like towards metal. If you think about it, the PMRC, they're all against it with Ozzy and Slayer, Megadeth, all the shit.
Well, they're an easy target. You know, they're a real easy target.
They're not going to take it. I'm telling you right now. The artists are just going to, if they're going to do that to them, they're just going to come back with a harder album, more lyrics towards that.
Well, that's what you got to do. That's what the folks at BAI did, because they came out and did something that that would get them even more mad. And that's what you have to do. You've got to, you know, you've got to fight fire with fire. Listen, I don't want to keep Raz, so thanks for calling. Spread the word, eh?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you know if beer goes bad?
Oh, boy. Just had to get that in, didn't you? All right. The address for the PMRC, Parents Music Resource Center. Don't send them any bombs or anything like that. That wouldn't be good. But, you know, send them letters explaining why you think they're bad, if you do think they're bad. If you think they're good, if you think I'm bad, send me a letter telling me that. I'd like to know. The address is 1500 Arlington Boulevard, Arlington, Virginia, 22209. And their phone number is 703-527-9466. Fax number 703-527-9468. I don't know how many death speed metal people have fax machines, but hey, why not, you know?
Hey, I have one.
You have one? Well,
yep.
fax your opinions over, you know? That's what they're for.
These people don't listen. They don't have anything in their head.
Well, those are the people that, you know, they have all the money, unfortunately. But that's our show for tonight, folks. But it's not the end of this particular saga, I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of losing my head. I've been up for 2 days. I don't know. I don't know what's going on anymore. Jim, thanks for steering the ship over here, because
thank you.
I get out of control sometimes.
Thank you.
We'll see you in about 3 weeks, eh?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's hope that we're not banned by then. And let's hope that Joel Block gets off that 900 number soon, too. I really have a problem with that. We'll see you. I'll see you next week. Stay tuned for Raz. Be good, everyone. Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications. Sunshine.
Hi, this is Matt with a concert billboard for Saturday, June 2nd. Tonight, Eddie Gomez will be at IMAC, The Chills will be at the Marquee, Luca Bloom will be at Maxwell's, Strict 9 will be at Sundance, the London Choir Boys will be at Bay Street, Bobby Previtt's Pocket Orchestra will be at the Knitting Factory, and Don Cherry and Ed Blackwell will be at the Symphony Space. Tomorrow night, Leon Redbone is at the Bottom Line. Monday night, June 4th, The Chills will be at Maxwell's, and Julia Fordham will be at the Bottom Line. Tuesday night, June 5th, Negative Land will be at the Knitting Factory. They're there until June 9th. UB40 will be at the Beacon Theater. O Positive will be at Woody's. Third Base will be at Bay Street. Stanley Turrentine will be at Sweet Basil, and he's there until June 10th. And Delamitri will be at CBGB's. Wednesday night, UB40 will be at the Beacon for another night. A Tribe Called Quest and Unity 2 will be at SOB's. They're there the following night also. Thursday, June 7th, UB40 joins the Smithereens at the Meadowlands Arena. Robin Trower will be at Bay Street. Friday, June 8th, the Choir Boys and Electric Angels will be at the Marquee. Overkill will be at Sundance, and tickets from the previously canceled show will be honored. The Original Sins, X-Men, and Crossfire Choir will be at Woody's. Bo Diddley will be at the Ritz, and the Bontemps Zydeco Band will be at the Stephen Talkhouse. They're there the following night also. Saturday, June 9th, Marillion will be at Sundance. Everything But the Girl will be at Bay Street. The Miracle Legion will be at Maxwell's. And on Sunday, June 10th, the Scofflaws will be at New York Avenue in Huntington. Hiram Bullock will be at IMAC. UB40 and the Smithereens will be at the Jones Beach Theater.